Morning, Tim.
You know, it was interesting. I had to leave early a off-system highway bridge meeting, and they were using this Google meeting interface.
Yeah, it's kind of mediocre.
I would say that was very charitable of you to say that.
Yeah, I've tried to use it, and it just, you can't get a good connection. Like, everybody's kind of, it's just weird.
Yeah, and I could, and I could only see half of the people that were there, and a couple of people, they couldn't get their microphones to turn on, and it was just like, wow.
Yeah, I was on one, we tried to use it for something the other day, and I was meeting with Paula and Helen could hear me just fine, and Paula could hear Helen, and Helen could hear Paula, and Paula couldn't hear me at all the entire time. It was so bizarre.
And then it was just classic state of Colorado. They wanted to have this meeting to talk about the process and the system for assigning the off-highway bridge grant funds. And of course, this year, I think for counties, there's going to be a grand total of $1.8 million to distribute throughout the entire state. They had five people from CDOT on the call, but the one person that actually knew about the program and understood it was not available to be at the meeting today. And great. So it was insane. And I was so happy to have an excuse to leave early.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's the state, I just can't believe it. So we're waiting for Larry Gilley to join us, I take it, Kendra?
Well, we're going to go into executive session. So
I think you just need to call the meeting to order. I think he's just probably already in the executive session waiting.
Okay. And then before I make the motion, this is one that's not going to be electronically recorded, correct?
It is electronically recorded.
This one is one that gets electronic?
Yeah, it's only the attorney ones that don't.
Oh, okay. All right. Great. So looks like everybody's here. Let's get started. I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss semi-finalists for the county manager position. This executive session is being electronically recorded, but minutes of the meeting will not be produced. This is an executive session for the following purpose: for discussion of a personnel matter under CRS section 24-6-402-4T1 and 2, and not involving any specific employees who have requested discussion of the matter in open session. Any member of this body or any elected official, or the appointment of any person to fill an office of this body or of an elected official, or personnel policies that do not require the discussion of matters personal to particular employees. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session if at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session. Please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is July 16th and the time is 9:35 a.m.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We will leave this meeting and follow the link that was provided to us earlier this morning to enter the executive session. See you on the other side.
Hey, good.
Beth, yep, you're here, Beth. That's great. The time is now. Kendra, are you with us? Is this everybody on?
Yep, I think we're ready to go. I don't see Doug yet, though.
He's not going to be coming. In any case, let me get out of executive session here. The time is now 11:24 a.m., and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: the Board of County Commissioners, interim county manager Collins and Larry Gilley of SGR. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. Just like to apologize to anybody that's been waiting for us. Our executive session to discuss our semi-finalist for the county manager position took a bit longer than I think we had anticipated. So again, I apologize to anybody that's been waiting for us to get back to our regular meeting. We do have, now we're gonna have a discussion around stage one fire restrictions. And I believe we have Mo DeMorat. Mo, are you here to talk to us about this?
Yes, sir, I am. Can you hear me?
I can. And Mo, just for your information and everybody else's, Commissioner Monger will not be joining us. He had a previous commitment that he could not get out of, but he has entrusted Commissioners Melton and myself to make a good decision here.
Okay, so I'll we're coming before the BCC today to consider the approval of an authorization of the chair's signature on a declaration enacting stage one fire restrictions pursuant to ordinance number 2013-002. As you're all aware, we've been meeting with our federal and our state partners on a weekly basis. This meeting occurs every Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning. We also had a separate meeting prior to this on Monday afternoon, prior to this Tuesday's meeting, the last Tuesday's meeting, to meet with the fire chiefs as well as the sheriff's office to determine what the feeling was with the fire chiefs regarding the necessity for going into stage one fire restrictions. Also, as you're aware, we do have seven indices that are measured each week. And typically, once we trigger four of those indices, we will consider and potentially recommend stage one fire restrictions. If we go to five, then that would trigger the recommendation for stage two, and then six or seven could recommend a stage three. At the current time, at least in the last indices that we received Monday morning, we only had three of those met. However, one of those was in question, specifically the one that states that available resources or fires are impacting available resources was not met at that time. But the indices came out, like I said, on Monday morning, and during the day on Monday, they had 13 new fire starts in the counties of Moffitt County and Rio Blanco County, which we did require a lot of the state and federal resources to be deployed. So while our current local resources have not been heavily impacted, we have had a couple fires and reporting smoke reports and whatnot. We also realize that if we have a large fire in the county, oftentimes we are heavily reliant upon our state and local partners to help our own local resources in suppressing that fire. So when we left the meeting on Monday afternoon with the fire chiefs, we determined that we wanted to see, one, if that indice changed, and two, what our neighboring counties were doing. Also, as a reminder, a little bit of background, Jackson County did go into restrictions at the end of the call last week, and the U.S. Forest Service, to include the Medbow National Forest, did go into stage one fire restrictions for the July 4th weekend. So on the call this past week, they did discuss the fact that our state and federal partners were heavily deployed, particularly in Rio Blanco and Moffitt counties, because there had been a significant number of fire starts with the weather. And the forecast of weather, while we are getting some rain, we are getting more lightning than rain. So we do believe that that the conditions are dry and hazardous there for wildfires. On that call, both Rio Blanco and Moffat County elected to go into fire restrictions. I believe Rio Blanco was effective yesterday morning, and I believe Moffat County's will be effective today. And then Grand County also elected to go into, or to recommend to their commissioners to go into fire restrictions this week. So that would put all the counties at stage one fire restrictions, and all of the federal property within those counties was coincident with the decisions of the county, so they are also entering into stage one fire restrictions. So our recommendation to the commissioners is to enact stage one fire restrictions effective 0800 or 8 o'clock in the morning tomorrow morning.
Questions or comments?
Yeah, I think I actually got away with an entire year of not having to use it. Maybe we didn't do fire restrictions last year, or maybe we did and I forgot. But Mo, would you mind just talking about the different factors and which ones we're meeting or not meeting? It's just not something I'm familiar with yet.
Sure. There are seven indices, and by the way, these are actually, we're looking at change needs and making them a little bit better with our Forest Service partners, but currently we are still using the seven indices that all the counties use. The first one is that your 1,000-hour fuel moisture content is 9% or less below 8,000 feet or 12% or less above 8,000 feet, and that has triggered for all the counties in the Northwest region. The second one is that your three-day mean energy release component is at 90% or above. That also has triggered to yes for all of our counties. The third one is your live fuel moisture content is 90% or less in sagebrush. This has not triggered yet for Route County, but in discussion, they believe that will be triggered to yes real soon as well. The fourth is that fires are impacting available resources. So like I talked about is that our local resource, our local fire departments have not had a significant impact with these yet, but we do know that our federal state partners have been impacted from all the fire starts out to the west of us. The fifth indice is areas receiving a higher than normal occurrence of human-caused fires that has not triggered. The sixth is the drought indicators. There are two of them, the Palmer or the drought outlook, that has not indicated tripped yet, although that is suspect as well, because we know, particularly down south when it's moving north, is that they are under higher drought conditions. And then the seventh is that adverse fire is weather is predicted to continue in our zone, which is zone 201, and that has triggered with our outlook. Also, all of our smoke and debris signs, which also measure this, are all rated at very high right now. So those are the seven indices that are met, or that are measured.
So who measures all this stuff? Like, where does this data come from?
I believe most of it comes what they call ROSs, and I forget exactly, remote observation station, I think, something like that. And most of that comes from the actual scientific measurement will come from our BLM, or the U.S. Forest Service, and then some of the qualitative data as far as experience and seeing what they believe the conditions are will come directly from the fire chiefs.
Great. Thank you for that background. That's helpful.
Mo, so it is our practice to, or it is your practice to recommend a stage one fire restriction when four of the seven indices have been met. That is a practice, not a requirement. Is that correct?
That is correct. And even though the measurements that came out on Monday have only three, but on our call Tuesday, which was after all the fire starts on Monday, was discussed that resources are being impacted, particularly our federal and state which we could be called upon for support, or we could be calling upon for support, but those resources are definitely impacted.
Great.
Which would for.
So I recognize that this represents an inconvenience for a number of people that might actually have some burning that they need to do, or certainly people that are camping that would like to have a campfire. But in my opinion, this is the rational thing to do. We need to, especially given our current set of circumstances, we need to try to avoid having to deploy resources to fight fires if we possibly can. So I'm going to be supportive of this.
Yeah, and I think in addition to what you said, Tim, sorry, go ahead, Mo.
No, I just want to say, would you like me to review what the stage one restrictions are and what the exemption process is?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, great.
Okay, there are five restrictions, and this does not affect federal lands. As you know, the Forest Service, BLM, will put out their own restrictions. But for all private and state-owned lands outside of the municipal boundaries, the following five restrictions apply. Building, maintaining, attending, or using any fire to burn trash, debris, fence rows, irrigation ditches or vegetation, any campfire, warming fire, charcoal grill, except in a designated campground, picnic area, or developed recreation site. So if you are going to a state park or even a federal park that has a designated campground, they have the fire pits, we use a metal ring around them, you can still use those, but for dispersed camping, you cannot just build your own fire anywhere. Second one is smoking, except within an enclosed vehicle or building, a developed recreational site, or while stopped in an area of at least 3 feet in diameter that is barren or cleared of all flammable material. The third is operating a chainsaw without a USDA or SAA approved spark arresting device or a muffler properly installed in an effective working order, and a chemical pressurized fire extinguisher of not less than 8 ounces capacity by weight, and one round pointed shovel with an overall length of at least 36 inches. The extinguisher will be with the chainsaw operator. The shovel may be kept with the fueling supplies but readily available for quick use. The fourth is a welding or operating acetylene or other torch with open flame, except within an area that is barren or cleared of all flammable material at least 10 feet in all sides from the equipment. And then last is using explosives requiring fuses or blasting caps. The exemptions are that persons with a valid written permit, which specifically authorized a prohibitive act, either from the fire protection district chief if the subject land is within a fire protection district, or from the Route County Emergency Operations Director after consultation with the Route County Sheriff if the subject land is not within the fire protection district. Any federal, state, or local officer, a member of an organized rescue or firefighting force in the performance of an actual duty, any fires contained within stoves, fireplaces, within buildings, charcoal grill fires, recreational fires at private residences with a valid permit from the district chief, and permanent fire pits or fire grates and developed picnic grounds and campgrounds, which I just described previously. The burning of irrigation ditches located within and completely surrounded by irrigated farmlands where such burning is necessary for crop survival with proper permit from, once again, a fire protection district chief if the subject land is within a fire protection district, or the Route County Emergency Operations Director after consultation with the Route County Sheriff if the subject land is not within a fire protection district. Hot air balloon activities and use of UL-approved liquid-fueled or gas-fueled campfire in a can. And then finally, campfires or bonfires required in religious ceremonies where a specific written permit has been granted in advance by, and then the same two individuals, either the fire protection district chief, if the subject land is within a fire protection district, or the Route County Emergency Operations Director after consultation with the Route County Sheriff if the subject land is not within the fire protection district.
Great. Thank you very much, Mo. Go ahead, Beth.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in addition to what you said, Tim, which I totally agree with, I think the fact that all of our Forest Service partners and surrounding counties have implemented fire restrictions makes it feel pretty clear that this is the right direction to head, in addition to the fact that our indicators have been met. We have to do what we can to prevent fires. And I think, as you pointed out, Tim, it feels more imperative this year because there are additional strains on resources that are a real challenge.
Well, having said that, I would think you'd be prepared to offer a motion.
Yeah, so this is not by resolution. Am I understanding that correctly?
It's an ordinance.
So we will have a declaration that needs to be signed.
Yeah, I see the declaration. But we don't need a resolution number. Do I understand that correctly?
That is correct.
My phone is telling me that she doesn't understand, but that I don't care what she thinks. Okay, great. So let me just find the motion here. All right. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize your signature on a declaration enacting stage one fire restrictions pursuant to ordinance number 2013-002.
Second. Are you not here? Am I not coming through?
I heard you.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry. We have a motion.
Second received.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mo, I have a copy of this declaration that I just signed. Should I return this to you or to Eric or to both of you?
To us, we'll take care of it.
Very good. I will sign this, scan it, and email it to you here shortly.
And I'm right, thank you, Commissioner.
And I'm using the declaration that was attached to our agenda on the website for today's meeting.
That is correct.
Very good. Thank you, Mo. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We are ready to move on to our COVID-19 daily work session. I guess I'd ask Mark to start off. Mark, did you have the opportunity to meet with the other entities to discuss the spending of CARES money yesterday?
Yeah, I did. We had a really productive conversation, and one of the valuable additions to our conversation was Greg Winkler from DOLA, who joined us and actually answered a number of very important and key questions that were prompted by the participants. We had participation from all the jurisdictions, and I can tell you with great satisfaction that we got kudos and we got gold stars from Greg, because all of the entities have successfully completed their applications with the cooperative agreement attached. And Greg said, good for you, because we have some entities that did not meet the deadline and had some issues. So he said, compliments to Rout County and its partners.
Well, and I would back that up, compliments to our county attorney's office for coordinating the production and collection and distribution of those documents.
Absolutely. The remainder of the call, Tim, really, Beth, was about some of the mechanics that are involved now. There have been forms that have been sent out by DOLA that we will all need to complete to go forward in terms of our funding reimbursements, but everybody successfully received those forms. Greg walked us through again that process. Couple questions about, what's eligible again. As you know, Tim, those questions came up in some of the previous calls. So Greg walked through that as well. Greg was able to kind of just bring us up to speed on a couple miscellaneous DOLA items. So we all, everybody involved in the call yesterday, reinforced the fact that it's really a good practice that we meet monthly and we do that check-in. So everybody is queued up and ready to have another meeting in August. Things are progressing well. And of course, questions, Greg is always open to any questions if anybody has any issues going forward. So overall, a very, very positive and very productive call.
Great. Thanks for attending on my behalf. I appreciate that very much. What else do we have? Beth, do you have any updates for us?
I don't think I have updates. I have a couple questions. I'd love to hear anything from the CCAT call yesterday, Tim, that you want to share. That would be my first question.
So, sure. Really the biggest point of discussion, unsurprisingly, was status of the governor's position on whether or not to issue a statewide mask mandate and whether or not CCAT wanted to take an official position on just that. CCAT ultimately decided to send a letter to the governor expressing support if he should choose as to implement a statewide mask mandate. There was a lot of discussion and concerns about kind of respecting the desires and needs of individual counties that may not have as high a disease prevalence as some of the other counties. And then also a very frank discussion about counties, especially resort counties, that may not yet actually have high disease counts, but are kind of in a unique situation with the number of visitors that they receive from around the country. Beyond that, there was really some housekeeping items around leadership changes, in particular because Commissioner John Messner has resigned his position as a Gunnison County Commissioner to assume his role as a professional member of the new Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And they're going to utilize the existing leadership structure to fill that vacancy and then address new leadership changes at our November meeting. There was the brief recap of the legislative session, but we kind of ran out of time because of all the discussion around the mask mandate.
Great, thanks. And then I guess Mark, and maybe I see Kathy's here too. So I guess I'm curious about, I just saw that I was sent the epidemiologist applications that we received, which I know that closed yesterday. We haven't talked about, you know, who and how, and are we going to wait until we have, I assume we don't want to wait until we have a new public health director to do those positions. So one question on just timeline and hiring for that epidemiologist specifically, and then also the health educators. Question two related is that I thought that Kathy was going to go ahead and present those positions to the board for approval, but I don't see that they're on the agenda this week. So just wondering when and what the plan is for that. And then my third question is just if we could get an update on where we are with hiring contact tracers and how many we believe we have on board.
Do you want me to start, Mark?
Yeah, Kathy, why don't you start and then I'll fill in on two items, which would be the interim public health director upcoming interview, and then also something on space allocation for the public health department. But Kathy, why don't you kick off with the answer to the other questions?
Okay. I have not presented the three positions to you because I have not been able to get my agenda to Kendra in time. So I'm now scheduled to present that on Monday. So that's forthcoming. And I apologize that I was not able to do that.
I think it's fine. I just wanted to know. I just was checking in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I could present it, but I don't have my agenda item done.
It's all good, Kathy. No problem.
Have you been able to keep busy, Kathy?
I'm a little low on bonbons right now. So the other thing is I'm going to try and remember all your questions. So epidemiologists, that those applications have come in. I was just looking at them because I think there's one missing, and I think could be a critical person that's missing. So I need to go back and talk to my staff because they did get one application that was incomplete. And so I just want to make sure that it wasn't one of the individuals that we were anticipating was going to apply. The other thing is that I do think, I think we could wait for the public health director to come on for this, but the epidemiologist is going to be doing work. And Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a lot of work that person can do that Michelle, I think, is working on now, and maybe one of the other nurses, and it is a big job. So if we can get someone on board sooner than later, then that can alleviate or, you know, kind of a little bit of a pain point that they're experiencing now in the department. Regarding having a meeting, I think Beth, you probably, or Commissioner Melton, you probably saw the email that I sent out last night regarding a meeting and I have not heard back from Dr. Harrington on that. And
I'll text him and see if
okay,
we can.
That would be,
because we
would
want
be great.
To before the end of tomorrow, right?
Well, yeah. And I did just get an update from the candidate saying that, you know, if necessary, they, you know, they're supposed to go camping, but if there's a possibility they could, you know, adjust their schedule. I think that would be unfortunate, but this person's being very flexible.
That's great. And then I was just asking about how many contact tracers have we been able to bring on board?
So we have been flooded with contact tracer applications, and we made the decision today to pull the job from the newspaper, pull it from our website. We probably have, I would say we probably have 40 or more applications for that. We have, Carrie had gone ahead and we have four people who are on board. So 160 hours worth of support that they can provide each week if they're going to work 40 hours. The only thing they need to go through is, you know, we need to get them up to speed on how to enter their time and such and be reimbursed for their phones, but they're good to go. The other thing is that there were five people that Carrie approved for hiring, and she reached out to those individuals. The SO was doing background checks on them when they were volunteers, but now that's transferring to HR. So I just completed a template release to get authorization to perform those background checks. We're signed up with CBI, and as soon as I hope to get those forms back today and get those background checks completed so we can bring these people on next week.
I knew you had said nine people. Is that the number we're actually going to decide to hire? I was really surprised to see that in the newspaper that Moffitt County was planning to hire 6 to 8. And it made me wonder if 9 was enough for Rout County, considering both that our population is much larger and that we have a lot of visitors, you know, and so accounting for that population. So I know that was the calculation, but just curious, maybe if we should ask a question to Carrie and Dr. Harrington about, hey, you know, we do have a plethora of applicants, not that we think they're necessarily going to all be qualified, but should we be considering a few more than nine or not.
Yeah, and I think that it depends on how many hours Moffitt is anticipating these individuals are going to work. So yeah. Carrie had indicated she wanted 14 or 15, no, 16 if they weren't going to work a full 40 hours unless otherwise. But so I would still proceed with starting with nine just to see how much time they spend doing this, because they're only going to get paid for hours worked. I also think it could be hard if we have too many people onboarding at the same time, which could get confusing and be a hardship for Michelle if she's the one who's actually training them. The other thing is that I do have my staff is looking through the applications and individuals whose background lends itself to having worked in public health or being in that right, that we're putting those aside as kind of, okay, here's a group of backup individuals if we need to add more.
Okay, sounds good. And then my other question, I think, and maybe this is the question Mark would answer, is just the hiring process for the epidemiologist, just because I did receive that from Kelsey. I don't know if that was just because I'm participating in the public health, but we hadn't determined that I was participating in that interview process. So I just want to understand what the plan is.
That goes back to my forgiveness process.
Starting to like that process, huh?
Well, you know, I'm just trying to get traction and move forward. So
I think on this, it's really critical that we keep moving forward. So
I did meet with Michelle and Carrie yesterday to talk a little bit about the transition and trying to get some highlights of what that's going to look like. And Carrie will not be participating in that. And she recommended that Dr. Harrington is part of that process. And since I wasn't able to connect with him about this interim public health person, the last thing I wanted to do was say, oh, and by the way, you know, we're going to bring on an epidemiologist and, you know, can you participate? I thought maybe that would be a conversation for another day. Yeah. But since we had a little bit of a team already for one area, I will say once you start focusing on one position within the structure, it kind of makes sense to maybe stick with the same team to focus on the other positions to build that department.
Yeah, I don't have a problem doing whatever as long as Tim and Doug don't have a problem with me doing that. I would just ask Mark to advise on that. I mean, it's one thing for a commissioner to participate in department head interviews. I think staff members below them, I just I don't have a problem with it if you think that's a good idea, but it wouldn't be as typical.
Beth, I do think, if you don't mind, I'll chime in. I do think it's a good idea. And here's one of the most important reasons is the continuity piece that Kathy just talked about, that given the interview that you're going to be involved in tomorrow, you're aware of the issues, you're knowledgeable in terms of some of the most important initiatives going forward. So I think that would be very helpful. The other is, quite frankly, we're in a unique situation really where we're going to have a vacancy in that department head role. So the fact that we could have a commissioner stand in, even though it's below that management level, I think would be most appropriate. So again, I know it's important to ask the question of all three commissioners, but Beth, if you're willing and you're available to move forward as being a part of that, the interviews for the epidemiologist, I think that would be outstanding.
I mean, now that I have childcare, I have all the time in the world. I actually, Tim, I heard from a constituent that our job is part-time.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I think 10 hours a week ought to cover it.
You could be a contact tracer, Tim.
There you go. I've got plenty of extra time on my hands. I certainly defer to County Manager Collins' recommendation on that. I'm fine with it. And then just the other thing for the group, I think we need to work really hard to be sensitive of and respectful of Dr. Harrington's time. We have, in spite of the fact that we approved a stipend, I'm reasonably certain that Dr. Harrington has already greatly exceeding the number of hours that were probably anticipated within that stipend. And again, not, I mean, I agree that he's appropriate to have on these interview committees, but anytime we can find a way to not impact his time, I think we need to strive for that.
And Mark, you spent some time talking to him, right? I mean, we need to make sure we get a sense of what's realistic for him. I don't think any of us want to do something that's unrealistic, but I also think he probably has a vested interest in the future of that department. And so we don't want to exclude him if he'd like to be included. So,
right. Tim, I appreciate those comments and they're spot on. Here's the interesting part of Dr. Harrington's background. Not only is he an outstanding physician and a public health professional, but he's also, by his own admission, he's kind of a data geek, and he loves numbers, and he loves the fact that we have an opportunity here to put an epidemiologist slash data manager on board. So given his background and his passion for that arena, I think that if he gets a chance to participate in that interview process as well, it would be a real bonus. And I think he would appreciate the opportunity.
Great.
So are you all going to be, can you give me a sneak preview? Are you all going to be recommending that this epidemiologist position is a permanent position or a temporary position?
I think at this point, it's best to recommend it as a permanent position. The last thing I want to do is get caught in a situation where we're bringing on a temporary person and then another year goes by and another year goes by and they still have temporary status, and temporary status really means that they're with us for less than 12 months and they don't get benefits. So I think that, everyone keeps talking about 30 months. So I just feel like it.
I will talk about it when you talk about the position. I just was curious, but I think given what you just said about temporary is really meant to be for 12 months or less. And we do know that CDPHE has asked us to project out 30 months in terms of planning for this. Right. That makes sense to me. And even if at the end of 30 months or whenever, I hope we don't go 30 more months on this, but you never know. That we decide it doesn't make sense for Rout County to employ an epidemiologist for regular public health work, I think we could make a change at that time if needed. And that what you're saying makes sense to me.
Okay.
You want to talk about those temporary positions in the accounting department?
We only have one.
Okay. We don't have to talk about them right now. That was a little tongue in cheek.
Tim, Beth, if I could, I think we have some really good news relative to space allocation. As you know, we've had ongoing conversations about, as we talk about staffing and where these folks are going to be housed, we want to make sure that they've got the right circumstances, the right space allocation amenities to go ahead and be able to do their job to the best of their ability. We have communicated with the commercial realty company here in Steamboat area regarding that ideal scenario. And I talked about that the other day, that we've got enough space for the staff members that we've talked about, that we've got enough supply space, that we've got a small kitchen area, which is going to be able to accommodate also a refrigerator. But that also we've got the capacity to maybe do some testing on that site as well. We have identified two locations in the immediate Steamboat vicinity that we think are going to work extremely well. We are waiting on more definitive information on the second location. And once we have that pinned down, we are going to be prepared to come back to you and come back with a proposal, a lease proposal, to go ahead and secure those allocation areas going forward. And I think that from what we know right now, again, the different components and the elements in those two areas are they meet all the criteria that we have visited about so far. The second one that we're waiting on the final information actually has had a public health component in the past, and would almost be seamless in terms of our transition. The other piece that's important for us to visit about is, as we examine what those lease rates are going to be, obviously, as you're well aware, those are going to be eligible for CARES reimbursement going forward. So we've got a funding mechanism to go ahead and address that. And I know that would be a concern for both the commissioners as it would for county finances. With that, I'll answer any questions you may have on that.
You know, and it may be premature, Mark, and I know we're probably still early in this situation, but at some point, I think someone needs to sit down, and I'm sure Dan has been working on it, but do some projections on those CARES eligible expenses to make sure that we're not spending money too fast.
We'll do, Tim.
I know that I had said several weeks ago when we were first looking at that tranche of money coming from the CARES allocation was how in the world will we actually spend all that money? And I think that worry is evaporating quickly and turning into how in the world will we be able to cover all of these costs?
Right.
Two things to look at, Tim.
Exactly right. Here's one other bonus to this space allocation exercise, and that is there is a very distinct possibility that the spaces we're looking at could also accommodate our human services staff members, so that when we anticipate going forward with our building project, we've got that space available to house those people additionally. So there's that added bonus to this. And yeah. I think that's a very exciting prospect.
That is great. Tim, I would just say one thing about the CARES allocation, and you're right, we need to put pencil to paper on it. But there's kind of two things. There's money that we would be spending anyway. And under the COVID relief fund, there's things like staff salaries that's money that we have the potential to get reimbursed, but it's money that we would have been spending either way. And as far as I'm concerned, that's sort of just a bonus. If this money covers all of our additional expenses, I think that's the most critical. And if it covers expenses that had to be reallocated, that's just sort of, like I said, a bonus for us and a good thing, but I'm more confident that we can get closer to covering the additional expenses. And if that means we can't cover any of those reallocated costs, I think that that's still a win.
I don't disagree with you at all. I would feel more comfortable when I see that analysis on paper in front of me.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Is there anything else that we feel like we need to talk about today?
I just had one question since Mo is on the call. Mo, I didn't know if you and Carrie and Michelle had talked about vehicles or yesterday. Was there something that you guys were trying to sort out as maybe a potential interim vehicle for their use?
No, we did not. We ended up not getting a chance to meet yesterday. We did not. The intent was not to talk about vehicles. The intent was really just looking through the work plan and those activities that fell underneath the virus suppression line of operation, and to see how those activities would be completed until we get the new public health director on board, as well as the other support. That was the intent. So it wasn't specifically about vehicles. Though the difference is that we were going to look at in the one Council of Aging van and then meet with Ray to see how that can possibly be converted into a mobile testing site and eventually a mobile vaccination clinic. So that was the only vehicle that was going to be discussed.
I do think, Mo, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but I think the intent, if possible, is to not have there be a gap between Carrie's departure and an interim being on board. So just when you're thinking about transition plans, just consider that, I guess.
Okay.
And I think, Mo, you're aware in your conversations with Ray, as we glean some information from Moffitt County, who has gone ahead and I think procedurally they're taking the steps to acquire a mobile testing van. Right now, it sounds like the approximate cost of that is going to be in the neighborhood of $100,000. And that's their preliminary estimates. You bet. We've got that existing van that we've got in our fleet. But I think it's we understand that when you do that conversion and you've got all the components go with that, it can get fairly expensive. That's why it's very, very encouraging in terms of thinking about the spaces I just mentioned earlier that could accommodate testing. If we've got that secured and we've got that capability and that option, that puts less pressure on maybe the need for a mobile testing van, at least for right now.
Mo, you and I had talked quite a while ago about the Community Foundation funding and that there might be some interest there in supporting a mobile clinic. Did that conversation go anywhere when you guys talked?
It did not go anywhere because at that point when we were looked, that was really the ultimate reason for that was to be able to establish an alternate care facility. And once it was determined that we required an alternate care facility to be underneath the umbrella of the hospital, and the hospital is unwilling to do that without a governor's executive order, so we had to make the decision that if there was a surge that exceeded the hospital's capabilities, they would have to be transported down to one of the state facilities. We did not pursue that medical capability anymore.
Got it. Well, maybe that's another thing to consider as we're having this conversation. If that is a need, maybe there are other resources available.
You know, speaking of other resources available, remember when the CDPHE was sending the National Guard around to set up testing sites around the state? And, you know, maybe instead of us having to spend $100,000 on a vehicle, we could reserve that for other more important things, and the state would provide those kinds of resources for us.
The only thing I'd like to add is that the testing capability was an immediate capability, and it does provide more flexibility. Now, if we have spaces available, I agree that may not be required. But it's also a long-term look at this where it could be used as a vaccination, whether it be COVID or anything else, and be able to reach our outlying communities a little better and provide better service as well.
Good point. Thank you, Mo.
I will say, again, if we think this is a value to Route County, one other thing to consider, I think Mark knows this. Tim, I don't know if you know this. I'm sure Mo doesn't. The conversations that I've had with CDPHE about contracts ended with basically, oh yeah, we totally screwed up, but we're going to try to find you some money. And so we may be in a really good position to get them to help. They literally use the phrase, look under the couch cushions. For things that we believe are a need for public health, because we've made it clear to them that they have not done a good job handling this situation for us. And so we're going to keep pushing them. And if we have specific asks, especially one-time things, we may be able to squeeze some money out of them for those kinds of things.
You do know what you find when you search the couch. Nickel and dimes.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, and my point is, though, for these one-time relatively smaller versus a multi-year contract, that may be just the kind of thing that they are able to find money for.
Yep.
Speaking of which, Mark, I don't know if you know this, apparently they will give us money for a fridge once we have an appropriate location to keep that. I don't know if Carrie shared that with you. I asked her about it because the other day I heard her say that they had bought Moffitt County a fridge. And I was like, where's our fridge? And she said that actually the problem has been that we didn't have an appropriate location for the fridge, but that they will purchase one for us.
I've got room in my office.
Well, apparently, you know, you have to have an uninterrupted power, some backup power supply, and it has to be in a place where people can do temp checks on it on a daily basis. And there's some rules about storage of this kind of fridge, and it just needs to be in the appropriate place. And we haven't had that. As we know, we're running out of space.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I have anything else, Tim. I want to go eat lunch and get ready for the governor's big announcement.
I'm looking forward to that too, but I'm not going to get my hopes up.
I just sent you an article that should get your hopes up, actually.
Oh, good. Very good. All right. Is there anything else?
Linnea is speaking.
I had an item, if I may.
You may.
Our local public health order expires at the end of the month, and I've been asked to get that on the agenda. My intent and thought process is to put that for a discussion item at next week, Board of Health, and then a action item on the next week's, unless you guys would like me to handle that differently.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's fine, Linnea.
I noticed, by the way, that Summit County's public health order is in effect until further notice.
I noticed that with Boulder's face mask order as well.
Well, we may want to have some conversation around that. I agree. It's a little, it seems a little onerous to keep doing this every 4 to 6 weeks. And then it, while we think that that may provide some predictability, practically it really doesn't. And it may be more predictable to have something that goes until rescinded. So maybe that's a conversation we ought to have with Commissioner Monger over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, well, if we're going to have discussion on it at our Board of Health on Wednesday with the vote the next week, I mean, I think we could talk about it then.
Sure.
Can I chime in on that? Sorry.
Yes, you certainly may.
I mean to belabor the point. the argument for not leaving it open-ended is that things tend to get forgotten or lost in the wash. And in the future, it could potentially be unknown if the order actually ended or not, or was rescinded, unless there's a specific time frame. I see this commonly with resolutions. Years and years go by, and it's hard to tell whether the resolution is still in effect or not, because there was no end date. But in reading the resolution, it would make no sense that it was still in effect. So that would be my argument, to have a specific end date.
Well, maybe something along the lines of 90 days rather than 30 days.
Yeah, Grand County, I think, issued theirs like through September or something. Yeah. Like that.
Okay, well, we will talk about that next week. Anything else? I want to get a bite to eat before I anxiously look forward to the governor's announcement.
You know, he's always about half an hour late for these press conferences, I've found, so.
But, you know, he wasn't the other day. He was like 5 minutes late the other day.
Yeah, I don't know. He's busy, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Mark, any last items we need to think about? Great. We will see you all tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.